I am all in.
With Scott Patterson, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Hey, everybody, we're back and we're going to do the recap. And I am Scott Patterson, and this is the I Am All In podcast with iHeartRadio 111 Productions. We are going to get into presenting Lorelai Gilmore season two. What episode is this? Does anybody know?
Riley knows.
This is episode six.
Six? Almost. I was one off. Six. Season two, episode six. Boy, we're really motoring down that Gilmore highway, aren't we? My God, it seems like we just started yesterday. Already we're, you know, well into season two.
It's crazy.
It's flying by. Wow. Anyway, what you guys think? What you know? What did you think?
You tell us first. What did you think?
Well, I don't know. You want to do the
Riley.
Let's do Riley. Go ahead. Do the synopsis for us, Riley. Thank you.
I love doing the synopsis. Thank you for queuing me up. This is season two, episode six, presenting Lorelai Gilmore, air date November 6, 2001. Rory surprises everyone by agreeing to Emily's request that she make her debut at a debutante ball. And when Lorelai asks Rory's dad, Christopher, to present his daughter to society, she finds herself attracted to the new, more responsible man that he has become.
Scott, you give us your initial thoughts of the whole episode. Because I have a few things that really stood out. No one asked you.
My initial thoughts of this episode were discomfort. It was uncomfortable for me to watch Lorelai giving Christopher another chance for personal reasons, for character reasons, because it's still kind of a part of me, right? I mean, you can't separate.
Right.
You can't, it's hard to separate. And, you know, you try to put that stuff away, but it's like, I'm watching these episodes now. So it's reigniting a lot of stuff. And I just think, you know, after 10 years and he's in his early 30s that he's figuring out about responsibility. And you know, the one thing that really hit me, I got very sad at one point in this episode because Rory didn't have a dad.
Yeah.
And it really hit me hard about what could have been and how they should have tried to work it out. I mean, I kept saying to myself, why couldn't they have worked it out? And why couldn't this girl have had her dad? And he's such a fantastic guy.
Yeah.
You know, with so much potential.
Even when he said he's coming, they still were like, so 60% chance.
Yeah,
he's
right. Coming. It's like, you know what I mean? Like,
they don't trust him.
And so I related that experience to mine as a father. And I just couldn't imagine walking out on my kid, no matter how. But I mean, I didn't have a baby at 16. Okay.
I wonder, does Christopher and his relationship with Lorelai bother you?
Yes.
Because they clearly have chemistry.
I don't find it entertaining, and I don't feel the chemistry.
And I think it's because you're Luke. I see it, feel it. Love
do you
it.
Really?
Yeah, I feel their chemistry. I was bummed for her when he had to say, I can't stay because there's someone in Boston. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, you felt Rory was happier for him because I don't think she realizes how much Lorelai still loves him. But the disappointment that I felt for Lorelai, just as she sort of really was like crushing on him or liking him or... You know, I think their banter is always like right on point. And I wonder if it bothers you because it's like, that's what she has with Luke.
Look, I'm part of the audience now. I'm one of them. Okay. So what I'm doing is I'm watching this girl, this woman who this character Luke loves and thinking, get your butt to the diner and get it going. Let this romance begin. Stop effing around with these people that are not solid human beings. I mean, you've got a guy sitting there on a park bench and they're all moony for each other and giggly and smiley talking about how at 32, 33 years old, he's finally realized that he has to get a car and get off the motorcycle. And you know, and you know what the most telling scene in the whole thing for me was, is when they got into the Volvo, Lorelai and Christopher, and he turned on that horrible music. And I'm thinking, what on earth is that? But it's like, what? Are you kidding me? I mean, is there even a competition here? You know, it was like, get your butt out of that car and get to Luke's and let that romance start going, because that girl has a hole in her heart.
Yeah.
And it's like biology versus practicality and what's right for Rory. And another thing that got me is when, who's going to take me if Christopher's not going to take her to the
ball. That bothered me too.
And they're sitting at the table saying, well, who could it possibly be? And I'm thinking, me.
That bothered me too. I agree.
Taylor. Rory said, well, we could get Taylor or, maybe we get the sanitation guy or I'm like, what?
Do you think that
it hurt?
I was hurt. It was jarring for me too.
Do
you think the writers didn't write Luke? Because if they would have said Luke, you were the more logical choice than Christopher. It was almost like they couldn't say it.
Because they would have
been all like, yeah, of course Luke is going to do it.
But it still hurt.
It was like, why even have this storyline with Christopher?
So that's again, getting the audience to participate in the piece by leaning forward and saying, what about Luke?
Yeah, that was very jarring for me too.
That was really jarring. I was just like stunned.
I think the part you and I disagree on is I do like the chemistry with Christopher.
I don't.
I always think they have a great banter. They know each other so well. What I haven't figured out yet, even though I've seen all the episodes and I know, is that at this moment, does Lorelai crush on Christopher as she's seeing him become what she always wanted him to be in the old feelings? Do you know what I mean? Like, does she really love him now, or does she just love that he's the dad and they never had their shot and blah, blah, blah?
I think he's going to end up being the rebound guy for Max. And I think he's going to know that. And I think
you don't know.
I mean, I, right. Do I not know?
I do not know what's coming.
I don't know what's coming. Well,
I remember little bits, but
I guess I don't understand as much as I hoped I would understand the human heart, because she's bouncing around like a pinball machine looking for love. And she deserves it. And she deserves a really solid guy. I don't want to criticize Christopher. I think he's a terrific character and a terrific guy. But he's not settled. He's not right for them. Now that Rory is older now, it's going to do less damage to Rory. And maybe not so much Lorelai. If they do get back together, she goes off to college. Christopher and Lorelai are together. And they're having a fabulous time. And if it doesn't work out, it's not going to destroy Rory's future. Any damage done has already been done.
Right,
she's already worked it out. You know what I mean? She's already worked it out. She's grown past it.
And there is damage done.
Sure.
But it doesn't seem so tragic.
Sure.
I always notice, Christopher pulls up in the Volvo. Rory comes out. She's so happy to see him. Lorelai and Christopher always kiss. They always kiss hello, and she doesn't do that with other characters. And then there was three kisses in this episode. She definitely kisses him like on the mouth when they're in Stars Hollow, and she's saying, Boston's not that far.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they have this chemistry connection, but it is physical.
He can't
touch each other. And there were three kisses. She kisses him goodnight, like on the lips.
He can't handle her.
To bed.
He cannot handle Lorelai. He cannot exist in that world. He is not able to exist in that world. They are not a good couple. Okay. Even though they made a child, they're not right for each other. To me, that is clear. She is too powerful. And he is too unsettled. Yeah. He's always catching up. It's like he's so boyish.
That's right.
It's like he's not emotionally mature enough to catch up to where she is in her life. She moved on and she made a, a career and a life for Rory. What the hell's he been doing? Riding around on his motorcycle, you know, starting businesses unsuccessfully, you know, searching the lost soul.
He tells her about Sherry that they're living together.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to lead the witness. How did you feel? What did you feel when he told her that?
I didn't understand why he let it get to that point where he knew there was all this flirtation and he knew there was all this chemistry between them. And her, and obviously she was egging him on and looking at him and, you know, being very open to him. And he could read those signs very early on in the episode. So why did he let it get to that point? So to me, it seems a little sort of passive aggressive and a little hostile, you know?
He acknowledges that. I was disappointed for her. Even though, look, I love Luke and Lorelai, I was disappointed. I felt bad for her.
I did too. I mean, she's barking up the wrong tree and it's so obvious. But, you know, we're talking about somebody who is working her tail off to being a great mom and she wants some love in her life.
Yeah.
She deserves it. But it's right down the street serving your coffee. Okay.
And, you know, they end in the diner, eating the burger, up.
Yeah, that was good. That was funny.
You know what I think is so well done about this episode? Is the sprinkling of Jess. They are not beating us over the head with Jess. It's not like we met him last week and now Rory's falling in love with him. It's just sprinkling. Mm-hmm. It's like we're getting to know him. We had two great scenes with him. But it's more subtle. Did you notice that? I don't feel like anyone's banging me over the head.
No, it's like what we're seeing now is like, you're not fit for society and you're in boot camp and I'm your drill instructor and this is what's happening. And once you're prepared, you will have more scenes with other people.
What do you think when he's wearing the Luke?
Classic moment. it's like now, you know, it's still his rebellious self. I mean, he's conforming without conforming, you know, there's a double meaning there. So it's, you know, it's another typical clever, rebellious Jess move, right? I mean, without having to say anything. So
he's a
brilliant character. He's a brilliant kid, you know. But I think it shows on a certain level, a lot of respect, you know, an unconscious level of respect for Luke, you know, because he went into his closet and he put on one of his shirts and one of his hats and came downstairs. So he's really making nice, you know, there's nothing upset about for Luke. He's really making nice. And it's like, hey, I'm going to make
in
a joke out of
Jess
this.
Jess kind of way. And
right.
I see Rory watching him.
Right.
That's what I thought was interesting when she's eating the burger in that, you know, second to last scene, just watching him, watching you two. She's not ignoring him. They're both were watching you guys.
That's why he was cast. You can't ignore that, right? But this episode really framed for me, looking forward and also framed looking back, what could have been, what Rory will become. And what Lorelai could have been. And it was such a poignant moment.
Yeah.
Such a poignant moment when Emily and Lorelai are standing there. And Emily says, you know, that was supposed to be you.
Mm-hmm.
She goes,
followed up with the final scene of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
When Lorelai goes over and just to hang.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm here if you have you want to talk.
Heartbreaking. Absolutely heartbreaking.
I'm concerned about Richard and Emily, but I'm mostly concerned about Richard with, you know, he is having a crisis at work that he's being phased out and losing his identity.
I don't know. That moment for me with her cutting the trimming her rose bushes or whatever she was doing and Lorelai just like, what are you doing here? Hanging? What? What is that? We haven't established that. You're not my daughter, really. You don't really like me. And what are you doing here? And it just, for me, it took on tragic proportions because that's time, you know, that's 16, 17 years that you can't get back and you can't relive it. And that's a life. And that's a relationship that just won't be as full and fruitful and loving as it could have been. And I'm not blaming anybody for it. I'm not blaming Lorelai. I'm not blaming Emily. It's just life. Life can sometimes be very tragic.
What do you make of the fact that she went to Emily to sort of be there for her instead of going to Richard to say, hey, do you want to talk about what's going on at work? Like, she really went to Emily multiple times in this episode, which I thought was interesting.
I think she had flashbacks to her own relationship with Christopher and the arguments that they were having that split them up because they were of a similar nature. I mean, all these arguments are pretty much similar. It's like, you're not spending enough time with the family. You're working too hard. And, you know, they're in that kind of relationship and the guy doesn't want to talk about it, you know, and you're not listening to me. I told you, and you're not listening to me. And these are common, right? Everybody has them. That's in a relationship. And I think it made her just flash back to those moments with Christopher. Like, what have I lost here? And I could lose my parents and my father's, you know, he's getting older now. Mm-hmm. Everybody's getting older. And my daughter is going away to college and I am going to be alone. And what will I have? What have I created in my life that I've detached myself from my mother and my father? Mm. Necessarily in her mind, right? Justifiably so in her mind. But now what does she have? So the message is, you know, family is everything. We have nothing if we don't have our families.
And a little bit of Sliding Doors, that Gwyneth Paltrow movie, Sliding Doors, because, and I think you pointed it out in our last episode, when the fan dance is happening behind Lorelai, and you do have that moment of like, wow, she could have had an entirely different life. Had these certain things not happened, she would have been doing the fan dance and who knows what would have happened. And you see them wondering, and then Emily points it out by saying, should have been you.
I think it's high time, and I don't know if this happens in the episodes, I think it's high time that Lorelai gets some therapy.
Yeah, she won't, but yeah.
And talk about and really explore what made her rebel so hard against her family and the country club lifestyle and the cotillions and the balls and and all of that stuff. What made her move to Stars Hollow? What made her behave so rebelliously? What was it?
You know what's so interesting? Tell me if I'm crazy. Mm. If this show were made today, don't you think the wacky therapist would have been a character in Stars Hollow? Like 20 years ago, that wasn't so like what you did. But now, like, the whole family would have been in therapy. Or I don't know. I just feel like if it was made today, there would be the Kirk that was the therapist of Stars Hollow. And it would be the Bevette or the somebody just super... I don't know. I could see that because that is so logical what you're saying. Like, why are these people all not in massive therapy? Anyone that has a kid at 16, they all need therapy. Anyone whose dad isn't in their life needs therapy. Like, I think you make a really interesting point.
Yeah. I mean, therapy is a wonderful thing. And, you know, there are a lot of people out there that are trained to handle all kinds of different situations. They have a lot of experience in it. And Lorelai needs somebody like that right now. There's a lot going on in her life. She's going to lose her daughter to college. She has no real relationship with her parents. Every time she's at a Friday night dinner, she's sarcastic and hostile toward her own mother. The mother just tolerates it. And the mother even said it, Emily even said at the top of this episode when she came in the first time for Friday night dinner that we didn't see the dinner, but we just saw the entrance. She said, Lorelai, you're exhausting. And I agreed. Yeah. It's like so much energy expended for all this verbiage and all this sarcasm. And I was like, God, the level of
an engagement and doesn't go to therapy.
Right.
Like, and I get it. 20 years ago, it was a little bit, it wasn't so like obvious, but that would be a whole interesting thing. Yeah. I know we're running over. We have to take a break.
All right. I never, you know, that little clock and that ping, I never hear it because we're so involved. And that clock, that timing ping. Anyway, we got to take a break. The clock is barking at me right now.
Do you want me to reveal my secret when we come back?
Yeah, maybe. Sure. If you want to.
I'm not excited about.
No. But I have a bombshell too. So why don't we compare bombshells?
Yes. Mine will not be as good, but I'm ready.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure. Mine will be sort of like laughable.
It's like a pop gun?
It's like a what?
I have a bombshell.
Can't wait.
Yet another one.
Mine will go first because that way mine would be a letdown.
Right. Okay. Then I'll have egg on my face when mine isn't such a big deal, right? And you're just setting me up. I know how you operate. You're smarter than everybody put together. I get it. I understand.
No.
All right. So, all right, let's take a little break and we will be back and we will talk bombshells. All right, everybody, we're back. Amy has a pop gun of a bombshell. It's not really
it's like a
bombshell.
It's a light little something.
Go ahead.
But maybe let's... you'll have questions. Maybe I'll have questions.
I always do.
So I don't typically admit this. I debated whether or not to admit this, but it just seemed too obvious. It's hard to say. It's hard to admit. I'm not going to lie. I was a debutante.
No. Wow, that's massive.
No, it's not massive, but
that's
what I will
huge.
Say for people wondering is that isn't that over the top. It's pretty fairly accurate.
Now, where were you a debutante? In California?
San Francisco.
Oh my goodness, the hoity-toityness of it all.
The wedding dress thing is totally accurate. The escort thing is totally accurate. God. The dad part is totally accurate. It was all pretty accurate, other than the Emily's part was pretty accurate.
Right.
We did not have any kind of fan dance. Look at Riley. Right. Riley is dying. Were you a debutante, Riley?
Amy, I'm crying because I convinced my parents to not let me be a debutante, and I convinced them to give me the number or the money that would cost for the wedding dress and put it towards something else. Like, I was so against being a debutante because it was not my thing. And so I'm crying that you were a debutante.
People don't think goodness. It was my thing, but I was like, yeah, sure. Okay, fine. Basically just like Rory. Like, it makes other people happy. Like, it made my grandparents happy. It made my parents happy. Sure, fine. You know, whatever. But yeah, I have a full wedding dress, full poof, tulle, rhinestone. I mean, almost exactly like one of those dresses.
You have to share pictures. You have to share pictures of this event.
Okay, I'll try to
please,
find it.
We have to see these pictures.
My dad, so the difference was you had to waltz. And you had to waltz with your dad, and then you have to waltz with the escort, something like that. The waltz is hard. I was not a good waltzer. That was like, otherwise, yeah, I mean, it was pretty accurately portrayed. Maybe, I'm sure somebody was drinking, had a flask, just like back there. It's pretty accurate. I'm not going to lie. Like,
you were a debutante. Well, and did you marry your escort? Four out of five escorts?
I did not.
You didn't?
The escorts, so a lot of people would have like a sibling be their escort. Mine was like a childhood friend. There was less of that. Like, you weren't going to marry your escort, and you weren't like out like, who wants to be my husband? It was not right. quite
right.
that.
Right.
And
right.
I was a debutante in 1992. Hmm. So it was before this. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty accurate.
And you were in the paper as a result. You were in the San Francisco Herald and the San Francisco Examiner with a photo.
I think it's the Chronicle, the San Francisco Chronicle or one of those. Yeah.
Amy Sugarman debuts.
Yeah, it definitely says that. Like, it was, I think there was a group photo. It was like a little.
How? And you were 16? 16?
No, for ours, you're 18. So you do it okay. when you're a senior.
They want you to be able to drive to the place, right? I got you.
And then it kind of happens. I think it was senior year or something like that.
Oh my gosh.
And it's a little embarrassing. Like, it's like not something.
Why?
You know, because it's kind of fancy or hoity-toity.
So
it's sort of all the same things that you
embrace it. You're lucky, right? It's not good for you.
What's interesting is like, that's why I thought it was so accurate. Done.
Right.
Some of the reasons for it, you know, it's a tradition, mm-hmm. sort of a archaic tradition. It's sort of ridiculous, but it's sort of like you get it.
So you're Rory Gilmore. You're not Lorelai. You're Rory.
Yeah, I was sort
you
of
went
like,
through
it's
it.
Not my thing, but I was cool, fine to do it.
Riley, you're our resident Lorelai.
I am indeed Lorelai. In
you're
the scene.
Lorelai.
But I bring it up just because it was portrayed. It was not over the top.
No.
Except for the fan dance. That
right,
was
right.
epic.
Yeah. Wow.
And kind of like, even when, so we had older dads, do you know what I mean? Like, because we obviously didn't have weren't born when our parents were 16. But I love when she says to Christopher, like, you're a hot dad. Mm-hmm. He said, you're a hot dad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, there was always sort of like, oh, that one girl has the hot dad. Which is-
and where did this take place? Did you do many of these or just the one?
Only the one.
And where did it take place?
In San Francisco.
I know, but where? At a hotel ballroom?
Yeah,
where?
At the St. Francis Hotel or...
Oh, wow.
I think, something like that. And then it's just kind of like...
Was there a placard outside the room? The Amy Sugarman debutante ball? Presenting
the whole
Amy,
thing and there's...
Presenting Amy this, Sugarman.
I don't show all this parts, but there's like parties leading up to it and like a whole... thing.
Wow. Yeah. So you were introduced into high society, San Francisco style, in the early 90s.
Yeah, I guess so. I might have been not, like, there's two. So there was ours, and then there's a fancier one in San Francisco. I wasn't in the top one. There was one that was considered fancier.
Wow.
But it's just because whatever. I wasn't in the fancy one. I was in the
so here you are. Here you are during the beginnings of the .com boom, right? Mm-hmm. A debutante, 18. This explains all the yachts and the houses. This explains everything. I have no more questions. I get it now.
Only because I thought I'm not saying it about me. Mm-hmm. I'm saying it because I thought people would think it's interesting. Because some people might know it, or some people might think like, "What is this?" It was pretty well done the way they did it. And even when Emily gets so mad, because she's like, I thought this would be an elegant ballroom, not at a Shakey's. Like, I was like, oh my God, it's so hilarious.
What was the line she had about the flowers? She had a great line about the flowers. What did she say when she walked in and she saw the flowers?
Oh my God. She said,
what did she say? It was
baby's breath. Babies. We're not at the like hospital.
Are we in a hospital?
There were so many funny lines too. Funny lines. Lorelai with the book on her head, eating the kung pao chicken. Mm-hmm. I was like, I wanted all of us to see if we could walk with the book on her head and eating kung pao chicken. And she's like, I can even spit the peanuts back in. And then at one point, Rory comes in and she's all, hey, little Debbie. Because like a little Debbie, but then also debutante. I mean, it was whoever wrote it, this episode, definitely knew what they were doing. Just the nuances and the tales.
There were people on the writing staff that had been through that.
They definitely knew what they were talking about. They were not writing something they didn't know. Because even Dean going tales, which was totally like, oh God, like that was even worse. And like, almost like we had fun, but a little bit you're dreading it. You're like, this is stupid. What are we doing?
Right. And there was a great scene between Rory and that other girl, that blonde girl who was trying to decide which shade of lipstick.
Yes.
If I put the wrong color, I look like a what? What did she say she looks like?
A teacher or a...
A teacher.
Something. And she's been trying to decide.
No, a prostitute or a teacher.
Oh my God. And she's been planning, you know. It's so funny.
I know.
Rory
was so level-headed and cool, calm, and collected that whole time. She couldn't understand why all these, especially this one girl, was flipping out. I only have an hour and a half to finish. She goes, really?
Right. She was
I'm
so
ready to go.
Chill,
I'm good to go.
Even though she was down to do it. She wasn't put off by it. She wasn't anti it.
Right.
She just was sort of the chill.
Right. So let's discuss that, because that created a lot of angst inside of Lorelai. You know, and it really pleased. So Rory wants to please her grandmother. She wants to, you know, so here's the question. Is Rory influenced, obviously, is Rory influenced by her decision to actually go through with this against her mother's wishes? And Lorelai backed down pretty easily.
She really did. I thought so too. I was surprised by that.
Yeah.
That she was like, all right.
I thought that was going to be... point of contention throughout the episode. I thought that was going to be the whole episode.
Yeah,
but it was like the battle. Like, the battle lines are drawn. Here we go, and boundaries are being invaded again and crossed without permission. And Lorelai's going to get in a Maserati and head over to Emily's and give her what for.
My take on it is this: Rory loves making her grandparents happy.
Yes,
I also don't think she's so anti all of it.
Right.
She likes her fancy school. Remember in episode one, she was so excited to get into Chilton. Mm-hmm. She is not as put off by the fanciness of it that Lorelai is. It's not necessarily Rory's like, I must have this or entitlement. She just doesn't find it awful.
But I think from Rory's point of view, growing up the way she has, she doesn't want to face or experience any more familial battles. Mm-hmm. It's like, Mom, will you just put down your sword? Mm-hmm. This is all good stuff. I don't have to fight your battles with you or for you anymore. I'm done. I want to do this thing. This is good for me. I think it's nice.
You know,
my grandparents are being really great with me. Yeah. And so this is creating even more anxiety inside of Lorelai.
You're right. You know? She spelled it out pretty clearly. Like, hey, I don't have any reason like why I wouldn't want to do this. And it makes grandma so happy.
Right.
Why don't we all just like do it?
Yeah. Why don't we just relax? I don't have a bone to pick with my grandmother and grandfather. You know, you keep keeping this hatred alive and this division alive. But what's so awful about them, Mom?
You know,
they're pretty great to me. And they're pretty great to her too. They tolerate her.
Right.
I mean, God darn it, what happened?
Yeah.
What happened between this family? And that's what they don't show, which is so maddening, which is so wonderful about the show. Right. It's like, what happened? How bad were those fights? Can you imagine those fights that they had when she was 16 and I'm pregnant?
I was so sort of offended or
anti
this.
Yeah.
Whereas Rory's sort of like, it seems like, you know, okay, cool.
Been a nice night. Dad can be there and we can listen.
I'll watch BattleBots with Dean to get him to hold my hand down.
Yeah.
This thing.
I think every child's instinct. Or every kid's instinct who is, there's not a mother or a father in the home or whatever. Their instinct, if they have the opportunity, is to bring the family back together. Mm-hmm. That is in the psychology and the psychological makeup of every child that comes from a somewhat broken home. If it's not a completely horrible person that they're calling back into the family, right? So I think Rory has a lot of that, where she's mature enough to see the benefit for this for
that
her and
great.
For her mom.
Yeah, everyone's pretty great. These people are pretty great.
It's taking, you know, the adult view of things over time. Mom, this is going to work out great for me, and it's also going to work out great for you. So I really see now that Rory is the lead character in the show, showing everybody how to live their lives and bury the hatchet and come back as a family. So this is really a very slow motion revolution coming back to what once was and maybe even making it better. And she's carrying the torch for it without really being pushy about it. But she's just sort of, Mom, this is what I want. Yeah.
How great did Lorelai look at the debutante ball?
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of, which we could have talked to Brenda about, that was the perfect dress. Like, she looked, she fits in there perfectly with that little bit of edge, like knowing the bartender's name and the whole, you know, she's still her, but she's not awkward or out of place ever at those things.
Oh, no. She's cut from that cloth.
Same with Christopher.
Yes. With the clever little quick lines. Yeah. And I just, I'll say it again. He just isn't a serious person. He's not a grown up yet. He's not a fully formed man.
He's sort of playing the part of a grown up right now.
Right.
What did you think of their dance though?
Because I think that his father and his mother were really harsh.
Oh, they were praying. They were straight praying.
They must have crucified him.
Yeah, they really messed him up.
Oh, boy, yeah. That father.
What did you think of Christopher and Lorelai's dance at Miss Patty's? Because it was pretty awesome.
I thought it was pretty nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought, they rehearsed the hell out of that and pulled it off beautifully.
Yeah, they both danced well. And you also...
She moves very well. She's very light on her feet and She's a terrific dancer.
And I think it's important to the characters because you realize like, wow, these two have danced before. These two were on the path that now Rory and Dean are going to actually go to the ball. But like they knew the dance. They have that connection.
Yeah. They had their shot. Get over to the diner. I'll show you how to dance. You want to dance?
You know, we're not there yet, but there are so many epic lines in this episode.
There really are.
Hello, sailor.
I was writing them all down, and then they were coming so fast, I couldn't write that fast.
I was like, oh my God, I have like 1,000 lines I love in here.
Let's go through them.
Okay, we'll go out of order. I'll give you my favorite lines, and one will lead us right into the pop culture. Favorite lines. One is obviously, hello, sailor. And Dean's all irritated. Mm-hmm. And Rory says, I think you can do it without the hello, sailor part.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was amazing. I love, it's Luke, just Luke, Mr. Luke.
Mr.
That was
right.
The Shakey's line, which I mentioned.
Right. What is this, a Shakey's and these baby's breath? What are we, in a hospital?
Kung Pao chicken with the book on the head, spitting the peanuts back on.
Right.
Oh, I know. So Lorelai is talking to those women, which actually I do have something I want to ask you about, but and Christopher comes up and saves her and she says, you saved me. I love you. I want to have your baby. Oops, too late.
Mm-hmm.
I know you.
Kind of cornball city for me.
I love it. Those are, you know, I thought the whole thing was just dense again, too. Just so much happening.
Yeah. It felt a little, it just sort of, everything felt a little off for me in the beginning of the episode. It just felt, it got going.
Yeah.
Definitely, but it just felt a little. Riley, can you cue up the bombshell, please?
Oh God, I forgot.
Oh yeah. Oh, I'm about to deliver.
Wait, will you wait one second before your bombshell? Because I have one more question.
Go ahead.
What did you think of the scene on the patio in early in the episode? So Emily's having tea with her girlfriends and they are gossiping.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was aggressive gossiping, like about Truly Bishop and finding out that the husband had the other family at the Schaefer's cocktail party and she threw an ice sculpture on. I mean, that was some, you also saw that side of it, that there is aggressive gossiping and like very, the things you don't like.
It made me realize and also reestablished how powerful a social force that Emily and Richard are in Hartford. Mm-hmm. She pretty much reigns. She's probably, you know, she's the queen of Hartford. The grand dame, if you will.
Right, so, they even say it. You'll be able to get your granddaughter in at the last minute because you're Emily Gilmore.
Right. So she's a heavyweight in that in that area.
It was aggressive gossiping. I was like, they definitely depicted that accurately too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whoa, these ladies sit around and they're talking mad bleep about this other Truly Bishop.
It made me want to play a round of golf at a Tony Country Club and then have lunch with a tartan rug.
You know, or I wonder if some people are put off by that. Like, I would be interested to hear what people say. You know, obviously it was funny and entertaining, but if some people are like, woof, because it's gossipy.
Yeah, well, I think everybody gossips. I don't think
psychology says it's healthy. There's some element of gossip. It's why probably we're all fascinated with celebrities because there's some element of it that's like healthy for our psyche or whatever.
Yeah. Everybody gossips. Everybody gossips about everybody else. I mean, it's a given. It's how people interact.
I'm getting ready for the bombshell.
All right. Let's cue it up.
Is it an alien? An alien muffin, which people were like, why does she keep calling it an alien muffin?
Okay. What are we observing here, Amy? We are observing a scene where...
In the episode,
let's go ahead and play it. Hang on. What does she ask for? She asks for a gum wrapper to write down a phone number.
Yes, she's trying to get Christopher's new number. So this is the scene.
Correct. Now look, there's a notebook. There's a notepad. How did that happen? Well, it just appeared. Bombshell. Boom.
Where did that come from?
Where did that come from?
Oh, rewind, rewind. So she's rewind. Writing that number? Okay. Was she writing in a notebook before that?
Nope. Gum well, maybe, wrapper. but she is was that, writing down writing on the gum wrapper.
All of a sudden, what happened?
Boom. Oh, now she's holding
it. Wow.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
That was Eagle Eyes McGee there, Scott.
I don't know that it rises to the level of I was a debutante too. That's big. That's a big one, right?
Thank you so much. I think you win this round. There was a lot of clown pillow in this too.
There was ramen and clown pillowing. There definitely was back and forth.
And it was almost like, oh my god, the clown hole.
So what are we taking away from this episode? Why was this episode? Oh, look who has time. Who's dropped in? Our right fielder.
Is Danielle here?
Our right fielder, Danielle, has decided to join us.
For everyone listening, Danielle was at the vet with the dog, so we will give her a pass.
That's right.
I know you don't know what has been happening, so just give your thoughts.
Yes, I have so many thoughts.
Go ahead.
I did tune in for the last 15 minutes, so at least I heard some of your lines and stuff. But I will say that this episode, and Scott and I briefly spoke about it a little bit earlier, I loved it so much. I thought it was so good to see a different side of Lorelai. And also for a lot of the episode, I was like, oh my God, Lorelai and Christopher, they need to just be together. Like, their chemistry is fire. Like, it's so good.
No. something wrong with you people. There's something wrong with you people.
Heartbreaking. It was so sad for her.
Something seriously wrong with you people.
And she kind of goes on a limb. It's so like every girl's nightmare where you go and say it to the dude. And then you're like, oh, you have a girlfriend?
She was putting in a big effort there to bat her eyelashes at him.
Danielle, did you notice they kiss on the lips all the time?
Yes.
I was like,
kiss on the lips and boom. Sorry, I'm seeing somebody else from Boston.
I need to take a break. I'm sorry. You guys just talk about this stuff.
Scott's getting hurt feelings. I'm getting a little sensitive here.
Anyway, Danielle, go ahead. I don't mean to interrupt you. Please.
And I know those were my thoughts. And then I just, for the first time, but this episode in particular, I just thought it was very fascinating, the dynamic between Emily and Richard. Mm-hmm. And then I just got heart-wrenched with Richard, realizing he's getting old, he's being phased out. It's time for him, for his identity not to be about work anymore. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And he's just having that self-crisis moment where he's
I just want to tell you all what happens, but I won't.
Don't do it.
But I got really sad. I was his identity has been all about work for so long. Mm-hmm. And now that's not going to be his identity anymore. Right. And what that means for their relationship, because his identity is what gives them their social status, you know? Mm. So,
wow.
Well, they could spend more time together. You know, he's obviously a workaholic. He's that type A workaholic. And look at what he has built up.
It fulfills him. It's what makes him feel like a contributing member of society.
You got to have it. I mean, I always felt like, boy, I need to work. I have to have a job. I can't lay around. Every time I don't vacation well, unless I'm skiing. Because I feel like I'm working, right?
That's
actually
what takes your mind away from it.
Yeah, and I'm hiking.
He's rejecting the cocktail party and rejecting the debutante ball. Because his identity is kind of starting to
Important.
Too bad he can't take the time to enjoy his success with Emily and go to these cocktail parties and but he can't. He's busy.
Right. Because he feels
he's busy.
Worthless if he's not working or
he feels important. The pressure.
Yeah.
It's like now, you're over 60, you go to the gym, you gotta work twice as hard to get half the results.
Ooh, that sounds bad.
That's Danielle, were you a debutante? The reality. That's what in work parlance, that's what Ed is experiencing.
She's
I was
sit up. Don't fall down. Don't fall.
Danielle's face when I asked her if she's a debutante. Her face.
Oh, what? What? Were you a debutante?
Hell no. Nope.
Did you know people that were?
Yes. And I would say, like, during that time, I was like, oh, you know, so and so from school is, you know, doing the gets dressed up in the white dress. But it was just never my thing. Never my thing. But a lot of friends of mine were.
Really?
Did you hear that Riley was a debutante?
No, you were.
That is the fattest lie I've ever heard. I was absolutely not a debutante. I did everything in my power to not be a debutante.
Right, right. You made the deal to get the cash. You took the cash option.
Riley was an entrepreneur.
I told my parents what you'd spend on the dress, I'll take into my account. You know, yes. Put it towards school or something else.
That's so interesting. So, Danielle, none of us were debutantes.
Amy, I would have thought you might have been. I would have maybe, but you were.
Yeah.
You were.
You missed that part, yeah.
Oh, she was a big time. Big that time, David. She was like,
I will try to find. I don't know if I
headlines can. In the San Francisco Chronicle. I mean, there were huge stories that day, and they just bumped them all like Sugarman's a debutante. No, let's get them on the front page.
Very, like, back page of the calendar section or something. But,
yeah. Back pages. I don't think so. Anyway, what else should we unearth about this episode?
Oh, I know. I was going to lead us into the pop culture with one of the best lines in the whole thing. So Riley, you'll have to go out of order, but it is when Lorelai says, nobody puts baby in a corner. And we all know why this line means so much.
Mm-hmm.
Because Kelly Bishop was in the corner in Dirty Dancing when that line is delivered by the most iconic Patrick Swayze.
Most iconic.
God, he was, that movie is so good.
I worked with him on a movie.
What movie?
Three Wishes.
I heard he was the nicest guy. We interviewed him a few times and he was, but
he was like, it was bizarre how it was not just nice. He came off like some kind of, I don't know, almost yogic figure, like a yogi.
Yeah.
I mean, he was spiritual. So centered and so, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and any time, and he wanted to get to know everybody. And he, stars of that stature don't sit down and have lunch with people like me. And he did.
Wow.
Not just on one occasion. I was on that film for 3-4 months.
Wow.
And we sat down and had lunch frequently. And it was, I mean, he was just the nicest, giving me all this guidance. And I'd ask him a ton of questions and he'd smile and he'd laugh. I mean, what a nice guy. And Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio was on that film too. Yeah. And she was the same way. She was the same
That's
way.
So, cool.
So you had these two people that were just like these, I don't know. They were just like more highly evolved beings. You know,
yeah, what's crazy about Dirty Dancing is like it wasn't such a big movie when it first opened. It was over time. It's become this massive movie. And then he had another one with Ghost. So you're like, God, this guy is like just a massive movie star.
Oh, massive movie star. And you know, he was playing that type of a character anyway. Like a magical man that comes as like some kind of traveler who comes into their lives. And in the 1950s.
Dance, sing, like that
oh, God.
Stud.
I know. What a great guy. What a great guy. You just fall in love with him right away.
I carry all a watermelon. Right, that's my favorite line in all of Dirty. I carry a watermelon. She's like, I carry a watermelon. He's just so dreamboaty in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, to use whoever thought of doing this, use the line, nobody puts baby in a corner with the person that was in that movie, in that scene. I mean, Kelly Bishop was, I know we've talked about it before, was amazing in Dirty Dancing too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and everything she does. Very gifted.
She says,
very, very gifted.
Down.
All right, Riley, time for a little pop culture. You want a guitar accompaniment, an acoustic accompaniment, or no this time?
I don't think it would be complete without an acoustic.
Right answer.
And going straight into that beautiful segue, Lorelai says, nobody puts baby in a corner. And a couple of facts. Actually, at 35 years old, Patrick Swayze was older than the role of Johnny by 10 years and was only 8 years younger than Kelly Bishop at the time, which is
really
interesting. And Patrick Swayze insisted on doing his own stunts during the log scene. He kept on falling off the log and injured his knee so badly that they had to drain the fluid from his knee from the swelling. And that wonderful Kellerman Resort is now the Mountain Lake Lodge Hotel, and many fans make the trip up to this hotel every year. And the lake at the hotel at Mountain Lake Lodge dried up in 2002 and has been dry ever since. But if you visit the lake today, you will see a stone in memory of Patrick Swayze, which is kind of cool. I know. The song She's Like the Wind was co-written by Patrick Swayze sung by Patrick Swayze.
Love you so much.
And actually, Val Kilmer was initially offered the lead, but declined.
That is crazy, by the way. That's so crazy. It would not be the same movie with Val Kilmer.
Yeah, but he was offered, Val Kilmer was offered everything. He was like, it went to Tom Cruise first. If Tom Cruise said no, it might have gone to Val Kilmer. And then, you know what I mean? There was like a top five.
Was Val Kilmer's call sign in Top Gun Iceman? He'll always be Iceman to me.
Yes.
God, I can't wait till that Top Gun movie comes out. Is that thing ever coming out, Top Gun 2? You know, it was supposed to come out in like 2020, got moved because of the pandemic, got moved. I'm like, come on, I'm dying to see it. Anyway, sorry, Riley.
I removed my secret microphone that Tom Cruise communicates with me from my fireplace. It's not there anymore. I moved. I haven't had it installed again.
You guys are just setting these up, these pop cultures up for me just to transition right
that's
in
how,
because
that's
we're
what
gonna
we
go.
Do.
In.
That's what we do.
That's what you do. I just you make my job so much easier. Minus the strobe lights every once in a while. Lorelai says, now I know you would rather sit through Endless Love than be a part of this scene again when she's talking to Christopher about the debutante ball. So Endless Love is a 1981 American romantic drama film starring Brooke Shields and Martin Hewitt. This is the movie debut for Tom Cruise, and Tom Cruise's very brief appearance in this movie is critical to the movie's plot. And during the sexy lovemaking scene, the director squeezed Brooke Shields' big toe off camera to provoke a reaction that would look like she was having a good time, wink, wink. Terry Shields was very protective of her daughter, always keeping near, and she appears as one of the nurses in the mental hospital. And the film was also noted to have one of the most spectacular one-man stunt displays when Hugh Butterfield gets hit by a car in New York City and goes feet over feet.
Head over feet, girl.
Head over feet? There we go.
Ass over tea kettle.
Riley, was this also the movie with Ian Ziering, or am I messing that up? And that's a different movie that we're talking about this week.
So it was rumored, and I double checked, and Ian Ziering did have something else previously, but he was in this.
He was in
So it wasn't
Endless
his
Love.
Debut. He was there, but it wasn't his debut.
Steve Sanders, Ian Ziering, was also in Endless Love. Crazy. Has anyone in this group ever seen Endless Love?
Who's in it?
Brooke Shields. It was like a big Brooke Shields movie. It was not where she gets on the island with Christopher Atkins.
I didn't see that one either. Endless Love. There's a big song associated with Endless
Hello,
Love.
Hello, right? Lionel Richie. Huge. Endless Love.
Yeah.
And Diana
yeah.
Ross.
All right. All right. Yeah. I used to drive by his house every day.
Oh my God. I love him so much.
All right.
Love him.
So Rory asked Lorelai if
I never found out Scott saw Endless Love.
I didn't say that. No, I didn't watch Brooke Shields movies. I didn't watch Endless Love. Actually, it's going to come out on YouTube. People are going to go back, get archival footage of me weeping with a box of tissues to Endless Love, right?
Sorry,
in my tuxedo. Go ahead.
No, it
didn't happen.
I just not Debbie I just got really excited.
So sorry.
No, it's okay. I'm very excited for this one. We're going back to the top. Lorelai says, we didn't know we were walking in on the Lion King without the puppet heads when they walk in on Emily and Richard. And The Lion King is a 1994 American animated musical film, as well as a very successful Broadway play starting in 1997. The show features over 200 puppets, and it took over 37,000 hours to create the show's puppets and masks. For the film, the actual animated film, Frank Welker provided all the lion roars. Not a single recording of an actual lion roaring was used because the producers wanted specific sounding roars to each lion.
Whoa.
Final fact wrapping this out. Jonathan Taylor Thomas voiced the character of young Simba.
Cutie.
Moving on, Lorelai and Christopher sit in his new car, and Lorelai says George Lucas wishes he had this sound system. George Walton Lucas Jr. is American film director, producer, screenwriter, and entrepreneur. George Lucas is most known for creating Star Wars, and to assure the proper presentation of his work, Lucasfilm, Mr. Lucas's production company, created THX for the perfect sound and video. George Lucas's dog was a major influence on his work. The dog's name Indiana became the name of Harrison Ford's character in the Indiana Jones series. And the look of Chewbacca, Han Solo's faithful sidekick in the Star Wars series, was based on Lucas's dog as well.
That George Lucas, he just keeping it real. Love it.
Rory is trying to convince Dean into coming to the ball as Amy continues. Rory says, remember that I'll be watching BattleBots with you for a month, which Amy also referenced earlier. BattleBots is an American robot combat television series. Comedy Central's first season premiered in 2000 and its fifth and last season ended in 2002. The bots can weigh up to 250 pounds and BattleBots still exists today, and the World Championship was held in Las Vegas this year.
We're seeing it now. Chicago Dean is gone, and we have Stars Hollow's Dean.
Totally agree.
He's fully Stars Hollowed. Yes.
Totally agree.
Rory is chatting with the other debutante as she gets ready, and Rory says, could be a real Cirque du Soleil kind of night. Cirque du Soleil is a Canadian entertainment company and is the largest contemporary circus producer in the world. Some costume pieces in Cirque du Soleil's O are made out of shower curtains, and one traveling show uses 15 semi-trucks for transportation of equipment. Many Olympians actually go on to be part of the different shows, whether it's synchronized swimming or gymnastics, and Cirque du Soleil has also incorporated shows from Michael Jackson and the Beatles.
You know, the Rolling Stones use more trucks than that. They use 40 trucks, 50 really? Trucks. Oh, when they tour? Yeah.
I also feel like, Riley, you say Cirque du Soleil. You're really going du Soleil, but that's okay.
Is it duh?
I don't know. Cirque du Soleil.
Cirque du Soleil.
Oh, yeah.
Rory, Dean, and Lane are watching TV on the couch, and Lorelai says, Neil Young has got a thing on you. Got nothing on you. Sorry. My bad. Neil Young has got nothing on you.
That would be
you.
A different meaning.
How dare you?
Neil Young has a thing on you. What? Call the cops.
Piece of information, maybe. Neil Young is a Canadian-American singer, songwriter, musician, and activist. Neil is widely regarded as the godfather of grunge, in part due to his pioneering use of feedback and distortion, not to mention his love for flannel shirts.
Oh, like Luke!
Yes. Neil was offered $1 million to headline Woodstock in 94, but turned it down for the fest becoming too commercial.
What am I playing right now?
A Neil Young song?
I wanna live.
I was at dinner last Friday, and I learned that Neil Young is married to Daryl Hannah. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I literally had no idea.
For a while, I think.
Yeah. They're making it work.
Lorelai tells Rory she's lucky to have someone to complain to after seeing Luke and Jess argue. Lorelai says, oh, Sheck, you kill me. Shecky Green, born Fred Sheldon Greenfield, is an American comedian. Shecky was well medicated when he crashed his Oldsmobile into the Caesar's Palace fountains. As his car was drenched under geysers of water, Shecky merely turned on the windshield wipers. When the cops arrived, he rolled down his window and asked, "What, no spray wax?" Shecky's passion for horse racing, a horse named Shecky Green, was the front runner in 1973 Kentucky Derby.
Huh.
Fascinating.
Name a horse, Shecky Green, huh? Okay.
Snooting.
Wow.
Rory tells Lorelai she talked to Emily and she's going to be a debutante. Lorelai says, Rory, that's like accepting the position as the drummer in Spinal Tap. This is Spinal Tap is a 1984 American mockumentary film co-written and directed by Rob Reiner in his directorial debut.
I did a recording with the original drummer.
No.
The drummer in Spinal Tap, yeah. What's his name? Rick something? British guy. Fabulous drummer. He used to jam with him every Sunday night at the Kibitz Room in Cantor's Deli.
It's pretty cool.
In Hollywood, yeah. What was his name? Rick. What was his name? Rick. Look it up.
Doing it.
It's cast of Spinal Tap. Rick something. Just a fabulous drummer.
Doing it.
Such
hold on.
Great drummer. I did like three or four songs with him back in the 90s.
Purnell?
Rick Purnell, yes.
Jerry Orbach. Guy. That was the name of the guy
right.
that played Baby's dad. I didn't look it up. It came to me.
Don't put Baby in the Corner's dad.
Yep.
I want to get...
Emily and Lorelai are talking about the debutante ball. Lorelai says, I'm still convinced she had something to do with Lily Tomlin doing that movie with John Travolta.
Oh, God, I didn't get this one.
Yes, this is the movie Moment by Moment, a 1978 American romantic drama film written and directed by Jane Wagner and starring Lily Tomlin and John Travolta. It is widely considered a catastrophe of a film history and has been blamed for nearly sinking the movie careers
literally
of both
Lily
Tomlin
and
Travolta.
Literally did not know this movie even existed until this.
What's the name of the movie? Who's the movie?
Moment by Moment.
And Travolta and Tomlin together? Was it a romantic thing? Or
yes, like, they have a thing. The movie's like, she lives in some town and he's the young sort of ne'er-do-well. I don't know. And then
they
have a fling.
And it almost ruined both their careers before they got off the ground.
Can we even find that thing on streaming?
How are you going to ruin the career of a Lily Tomlin? She's hysterically funny and brilliant. You can't ruin her career with a bad movie role.
But
there's so many other avenues that she can take. I mean, she's a comedian, right? She's a comedic actress.
They both seem to have done okay after this, but who even knew this movie existed?
Did Lily Tomlin do stand-up?
Probably, yeah, but I mean, she's just genius, Incredible Shrinking Woman, 9 to 5, and now Grace and Frankie. I freaking love Lily Tomlin.
One ringy-dingy.
Oh, my God.
Two ringy-dingies. Three ringy dingies.
She scared me in that chair on Electric Company. That was scary.
With the huge chair, the little girl thing.
Big old chair, yeah. An Incredible Shrinking Woman fully freaked me out. But she's still doing it. Grace and Frankie, if you haven't watched it, Netflix it. Right next to Gilmore Girls, Grace and Frankie.
Really?
This episode was probably one of our best ever. Probably 20 minutes too long, but still real good, guys. Great job.
You can't cut anything out. We're not going to.
We're going to just let it be 20 minutes too long.
It's like there are different forms of gold.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, this is like a bronzy one. But I do feel like we're all on our game today.
All right. So is that it?
That's it. Whoa, sorry. There goes your guitar. Riley, what are we watching next?
We have episode 7, Like Mother, Like Daughter.
Great job,
right,
Scott.
Kids.
Great job.
No, great job, guys. Huh? We're back. We have our starting right fielder back from the
vet. Danielle really contributed, and we missed her when she's not here.
Anyway, everybody, thank you so much. Best fans in the world. And I want to thank my ball club here, Danielle Romo, right field, shotgun arm, Riley, Pelusis, shortstop Amy Sugarman. She's my battery mate. She's calling the pitches. I'm throwing the pitches. You know, she's the Johnny Bench of podcasts.
Thank
okay.
So
there you go. And I am Scott Patterson, and thanks for downloading. We will see everybody next time. Stay safe. Don't forget, follow us on Instagram at IAmAllInPodcast and email us at Gilmore@iHeartRadio.com. Oh, you Gilmore fans, if you're looking for the best cup of coffee in the world, go to my website for my company, ScottyP.com, ScottyP.com. Grade 1 specialty coffee.